Srila Prabhupada gave the instruction that in Bombay he wanted the classes to be in English. So I'm going to speak in English on the order of Srila Prabhupada. I hope you all don't mind. Good. Somehow or another, the classes have gotten to the point where they're almost all in Hindi. But Prabhupada didn't want that in Bombay. Where are we here in this? Where? Which part? Okay, so reading from Srila Prabhupada's Lilamrita. This is Jaipur, January 12, 1972. Jaipur is an ancient city in the state of Rajasthan. Occasionally, some of Prabhupada's disciples would go there to purchase marble Radha Krishna deities for ISKCON temples in India and around the world. The devotees in ISKCON centers in Detroit, Toronto, Dallas, as well as throughout Europe, wanted to install Radha Krishna deities, and with Srila Prabhupada's permission, were ordering murtis from Jaipur. On such an errand, two women, Kaushalya and Srimati, had gone to Jaipur in January of 1972 on behalf of the New York City Temple. When a government official had discovered Srimati wasn't carrying her passport, the officials, suspicious of spies, due to the war with Pakistan, had insisted the women stay in town until Srimati's passport arrived in the mail. Meanwhile, the girls had daily visited the Govindaji temple and had sometimes held kirtan in the street in front of the temple. They had daily talks with P.K. Goswami, who was in charge of the temple, as well as Jaipur businessmen and other respectable citizens. Almost everyone in Jaipur regularly visits the beloved deities of Radha Govinda. Yeah, that brings to mind, I had a similar experience. We were traveling in Maharashtra doing book distribution. And many times we would park the bus for distributing Srila Prabhupada's books in the most crowded place, either in the market or near the bus stand. And sometimes shopkeepers would cooperate. And they would cooperate so much that they would even give us an electrical connection from their shop so we could work the microphone. But sometimes they were upset that we were parked in front of their shop and they would call the police. So on one occasion they called the police and then the police took me down to the station. So just like they asked Srimati where her passport was, they asked me the same thing. Where's your passport? And I never used to carry my passport. But you're supposed to, as a foreigner, you're supposed to always carry your passport. So, anyway, I told the policeman, I said, listen, Do you know that in Indian trains, I've had 3 passports stolen? I never carry my passport in India. Then he said, oh, really? You had 3 passports stolen? I said, yes. Do you know how difficult it is to replace a passport? So I never carry my passport. And the policeman said, okay, that's all right then. And he let me go. Jaipur has a lot of history with Vrindavan because the Radha Govindaji deities that are there in the palace of the king of Jaipur, those deities were originally in Vrindavan, right? In the Govindaji temple. Those deities were the deities of who? Rupa Goswami, right? So when Aurangzeb attacked Vrindavan, they moved the deities from Vrindavan to Jaipur, and the king kept them there in the palace. It has a big garden, and in the center of the garden is the Radha Govindaji. So the people of Jaipur, they all come to see the deities right from Mangalartik. Right? Juhu is a little different. Even though Radha Ras Vihari are so conveniently located here in Juhu, how many people from Juhu come for Mangalartik? 1 or 2, or right? But if you go to Radha Govindaji's Artik in Jaipur, so many people are there early in the morning. Huh? Different groups from all over Jaipur, they come to the Mangalartik of Sri Sri Radha Govindaji. And they chant. You have one group over here chanting some kirtan, and another group over here chanting another kirtan, and another group over here chanting some mantras. Right? This is devotion. To rise early in the morning, take a bath, and attend Mangalartik. According to Srila Rupa Goswami's Nectar Devotion, this is one of the 64 items of devotional service that one can practice to develop Krishna Bhakti. So the people in Jaipur, they have this built-in Krishna Bhakti. It's a cultural acquirement. Srila Prabhupada wanted that the whole world develop this kind of attachment for Krishna, for Radha and Krishna. And that's why the devotees were interested to establish deities of Radha and Krishna in different places. Srila Prabhupada first instructed the devotees when the temple was just beginning not to install deities of Radha and Krishna right away, but first they should worship Gaur Nitai. Because Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are very merciful, and in their form as the Archivigraha, they are also very merciful. In other words, if you don't follow all the different processes for worshipping the deity, then Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's Archivigraha form, they still remain merciful. They give mercy. So much so that Srila Prabhupada instructed Dhananjaya Prabhu, one of Srila Prabhupada's early disciples, who lived in Vrindavan. Okay? He was a householder. And he and his wife lived in Vrindavan. And they had a small room in the Goshala. And in those days, not so much nowadays, but in those days, from the surrounding villages, the dacoits would come and would attack. Right? So living in the Goshala in those days was very dangerous. But still, Dhananjaya Prabhu was living there in the Goshala. And because he was a householder, Srila Prabhupada gave him an idea for a business that he could do as a householder to earn money. And what he told him was, is that you make small deities of Gornitai. And those deities can be sold, right? Devotees can sell them to people who may not even be a devotee. Srila Prabhupada said, okay, you can supply them to the West, and in the West, the devotees can take them out on Sankirtan and sell the sets of Gornitai deities. And what the devotee should say is that these are lucky dolls from India. Lucky dolls from India. And you can put them in your house and that'll be good luck. So Dhananjaya was doing that business, staying there in Vrindavan. But just see how merciful Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are. They're ready even to go into the house of the meat eaters and bless them, right? With their presence. That's how merciful Lord Chaitanya is. The citizens of Jayapur had been moved by the devotion of Prabhupada's two disciples, and when one of the men had asked, "What can we do to help your movement?" the girls had replied, "Bring Srila Prabhupada here." Some of Jaipur's prominent citizens had devised a plan to share expenses and responsibilities in arranging a pandal program, and the two women had sent a letter to Prabhupada in Bombay inviting him to come and preach. He had agreed. At Srila Prabhupada's request, devotees from Delhi and other Indian centers came to Jayapur to join him. Prabhupada took a small room within the Govindaji temple compound, and his disciples moved into a nearby house. Prabhupada liked the location. The only disturbance was the many monkeys, large, charcoal-faced monkeys with long, curling tails. That's the langurs. Some people call them Hanuman monkeys, right? Climbing through the trees and across the rooftops, they would scamper down unexpectedly to steal whatever they could. The women cooking for Prabhupada were exasperated by the monkeys' bold forays to steal vegetables from the kitchen. Even chapatis right off the fire. And they complained to Srila Prabhupada. Neither be their friends nor their enemies, Prabhupada advised. If you make friends with them, they will simply be a nuisance. If you become their enemies, they will become very vindictive. Just maintain a neutral position. Right? So Srila Prabhupada knew everything. So even how to deal with the monkeys, Srila Prabhupada had instructed the devotees. The monkeys, however, continued to raid the kitchen. Again, the cooks complained to Prabhupada. Yes, Prabhupada said, if you want to stop the monkeys, then this is what you must do. Purchase one bow and arrow and shoot a monkey on the top of a tree with the arrow. And then when he falls down, take the monkey and hang him upside down by the legs to a branch of a tree. Next to him, you also hang the bow and arrow. This will teach them. Prabhupada knew that shooting monkeys was illegal in Jaipur, and he did not expect his disciples to actually shoot them, but he delivered the advice with a serious expression. Indirectly, he was advising them not to be too upset over a few monkeys. Prabhupada and his disciples immediately joined in the intense devotional atmosphere of Jaipur. Since the Radha Govinda temple was under the jurisdiction of Jaipur's royal family, to visit the deity daily was practically required for all citizens. Morning and evening, crowds of enthusiastic worshippers would come and go, worshipping the forms of Radha and Krishna on the altar. These were Rupa Goswami's original Radha Govinda deities from Vrindavan. Almost 500 years ago, when a Mughal ruler had attacked the Govindaji temple in Vrindavan, the king of Jaipur had arranged for the deities to come to Jaipur. The worshippers at the Radha Govinda Mandir displayed spontaneous excitement in seeing the deities. They would come forward crying, Jayo, Jayo, Govinda, Govinda. And when the curtains were closing, the people would rush forward to catch a glimpse of the divine forms. Srila Prabhupada avoided the large crowds before the deity, keeping his schedule of rising early and translating the Bhagavatam. Speaking with Kaushalya and Srimati, Prabhupada praised them for having arranged the Jaipur Pandal program. You girls are carrying on Lord Chaitanya's movement so nicely, he said. Just see, even without husbands, you go on preaching. He said that Western women were different from Indian women who simply stayed at home. Then Prabhupada discovered that his two women disciples had not actually done a thorough job. Although the Pandal program was to begin in 2 days, no one had arranged for the large tent to be erected. Prabhupada said it was not a woman's nature to do such organizational work. The women became morose to hear him. When they showed him the flyer they had printed advertising the festival, Prabhupada became angry. It is not standard, he said. It did not say International Society for Krishna Consciousness, but only A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami and his foreign disciples. What is this? Prabhupada shouted. What, Srila Prabhupada? Kosalya asked. Foreign? Why do you say foreign? It must be American and European. That is what is attractive, that they are American and European. But you are just a woman. What can I expect? The two women began to cry and left the room. With Shamasundar's help, Kaushalya and Srimati and Nu had new corrected flyers printed and returned to Srila Prabhupada. But now his mood had changed completely. His anger was gone. He was soft. After all, these disciples had tried their best. In a disarming disclosure, he began to explain that to be a spiritual master was difficult. "I chastise you," he said, "because it is my duty." Disciple is related to discipline. So it is my duty to my disciples. Otherwise, I'm not upset with anyone. I simply do this to discipline you, because you are my disciples. He consoled them, saying they were sincere and lacked experience because of poor upbringing. The devotees present felt Srila Prabhupada was wonderfully expressing to them a bit of what he, as a spiritual master, felt in training them. In a great last-minute endeavor, the devotees obtained the pandal and erected it in time for Prabhupada to begin his program as advertised. On opening day, the devotees had a parade through the streets with Prabhupada riding in a palanquin. To begin his program, a large embroidered umbrella sheltering his head. Also in the procession were decorated elephants, brass bands, and devotees, Indian, American, and European, performing kirtan. Srila Prabhupada's first program was in the morning, after the darshan of Govindaji, so as to catch the huge morning crowd. People would come hurrying into the temple to see Radha Govindaji and then proceed out into the large Hare Krishna pandal beside the temple. On the opening morning, Prabhupada performed an Abhishek ceremony, bathing marble deities of Radha and Krishna. He named these deities, soon to be shipped to ISKCON Temple in New York, Radha Govinda. After one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples had performed a fire sacrifice, Prabhupada lectured to the crowd in Hindi. The schedule for the remaining days would be morning and evening lecture and prasadam distribution. While preaching in Jaipur, Srila Prabhupada was simultaneously reflecting on and through letters to his disciples acting on matters in many parts of the world. Although he participated fully, giving two lectures a day, and although he constantly met and interacted with guests, friends, and devotees, he was also absorbed in thoughts of other places and concerns. He was conducting his movement on many fronts. Whenever he happened to be, wherever he happened to be at present, was his quote-unquote camp. Just as a general makes camps in various places while conducting many battles in the overall effort of a war, his preaching in Jaipur, therefore, was only a small fraction of the scope of his worldwide mission. So Srila Prabhupada, although he was fully engaged in the Jaipur pandal, giving two lectures every day, helping the devotees to organize things, still, letters would keep coming wherever he was. If there was a problem here or some attention needed to be there. So Srila Prabhupada was corresponding with the devotees all over the world. At the same time, being fully active in Jaipur for the preaching program going on there. But not only that, at the same time, he was translating Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So you can just imagine how much busy Srila Prabhupada was. Right? And Srila Prabhupada mentioned that he was never lazy. He was always busy in Krishna's service. So we can try, no one can imitate Srila Prabhupada's intensity of devotional service, but we can try to emulate it. We can try to do as Srila Prabhupada did. Of course, no one can, but we can try to always be engaged in Krishna's service. And nowadays, the language is multitasking. Multitasking, right? One time you do two different tasks, right? So Srila Prabhupada was the master of multitasking and organizing a whole movement, managing a whole movement from wherever he was. Right? In his correspondence, up at the top of the letter, there would be camp. Right? So wherever he was at the time, he would write that in behind the word camp. Jaipur, Mayapur, Vrindavan, right? But actually, Srila Prabhupada would keep moving for Krishna's service. And he used to preach to the devotees like that, right? He used to preach to the devotees. There was a motto in those days, in the railways, keep the wheels moving. In the Indian railways, they had a, keep the wheels moving. So Srila Prabhupada said, this should be our motto also. Right? He told one devotee who was in charge of a bus party. That was Hansa Duda Maharaj. He had a bus that he drove all the way from Germany, right, to Vrindavan. So he showed Prabhupada this German bus that he had brought all the way from Germany to Vrindavan. So somehow or another, Hansa Duda had got himself involved in some politics there in Vrindavan. I think he wanted to become the president or something. And the person who was the president, his name was Akoyananda Swami, right? He was the president. Now, it's strange because Hansa Duda wanted to become the president and he was finding fault with Akoyananda. And Akoyananda never wanted to be the president. He wanted to go out and travel as a sannyasi. So Prabhupada called them both into his room. And he told Hansa Duda about this motto. Your motto should be to keep the wheels moving of your bus. Go and travel in your bus. You're a sannyasi. You're meant to travel. Not to be in the temple. Right? So in this way, he was encouraging Hansa Duda as a sannyasi to travel. And Akoyananda, who wanted to travel and who was actually the president, he was thinking, oh, now I'm also a sannyasi. So Prabhupada's going to tell me also to travel. Right? So after he got done preaching to Hansa Duda Maharaj, who was a Maharaj at the time, he turned to Akoyananda and he said, and you should never leave Vrindavan. So, one instruction was for one disciple, another instruction was another disciple. According to Srila Prabhupada's consideration, right, he knew what was best for everyone. And also for the project, Akoyananda knew Hindi. He knew how to speak Hindi. So Prabhupada wanted that, because then the local people would be comfortable with a president who knew how to speak Hindi. Okay. From Jaipur, Prabhupada wrote his disciples in Calcutta, urging them in their development of the Mayapur land. He wanted a grand opening ceremony by Lord Chaitanya's birthday in March. Unfortunately, the government was restricting foreigners from entering Nadia because of its proximity to Bangladesh. Please try very hard to get those permits, Prabhupada urged his men in Calcutta, as we must all be assembled there for Lord Chaitanya's appearance day. Repeatedly, Prabhupada mentioned his concern over the government's restricting his men. I do not think there will be difficulty if we just go there like ordinary pilgrims and set up our camp there for kirtan continuously. Anyone will see we are only serious devotees of Lord Chaitanya and not Pakistani spies. In those days, they thought we were the CIA. They thought that because it was mostly foreign devotees, there were very few quote unquote Indian devotees. Only a few. Like Hari Das was joined that time. A few. One devotee called Manasvi, 1972. There were just a few Indian devotees. And mostly devotees were from the West, especially America, and from England. The devotees from England had a special facility because in those days in India, if you were from any Commonwealth country, right? You know Commonwealth? Commonwealth? No? Okay. So anyway, India used to be part of the British Empire. And all of the countries in the British Empire were known as the Commonwealth countries. Means countries in the British Empire. So after India gained independence in 1947, okay, good. You know your history. That's nice. 1947. The Indian government said anyone who was from the Commonwealth, any Commonwealth country, didn't require a visa. So although for the American devotees it was difficult to get a visa and to stay in India, the devotees from England and Ireland and the Commonwealth countries, they didn't require a visa. They could stay as long as they liked. So we had many devotees, especially in Vrindavan, who were from England, like Padmalochan, Tribhuvanath, Akshaya, and Dhananjaya, and Akoyananda Swami at that time. They were all from England, so they could stay. But the government always was suspicious. And even in the parliament one time, they mentioned that the devotees from ISKCON are CIA agents. They're from the American Central Intelligence Agency. They're CIA agents. And they have so much money. They have so much money. So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, we have money because Krishna gives us money, not the United States government. Prabhupada rode ahead of his disciples in Nairobi, driving them onward with the blessings, continue to work very hard for his pleasure, and all of you will go back home, back to Godhead. So here it is. Srila Prabhupada's giving us a benediction, right? This is not only for his disciples, but for all of his grand disciples, right? And soon there'll be great grand disciples, right? Because all of you will have disciples one day, and those will be not Prabhupada's grand disciples, but Srila Prabhupada's great grand disciples, right? But the benediction is there for everyone still, right? And that is, quote, continue to work very hard. It doesn't mean to have an easy life, right? Take a little prasadam and take it easy. No. Prabhupada saying, continue to work very hard for his pleasure. Whose pleasure? Krishna's pleasure. Right? Work very hard for the pleasure of Krishna, and all of you will go back home, back to Godhead. So there it is, the whole Krishna consciousness philosophy in a nutshell. Work very hard for his pleasure, and you will all go back home, back to Godhead. What more do you want than that? Right? Everything else is just a detail. It's all right there. Srila Prabhupada had this unique capacity. Within a sentence, he could sum up the whole Krishna conscious philosophy. To the San Diego Temple president, Srila Prabhupada wrote. So he's writing all these letters, San Diego, Nairobi, different places around the world. At the same time, he's preaching in the Jaipur Pandal program. That's the point. So he wrote to San Diego, I'm very pleased to hear from you that the book sales are increasing very fast. What was Srila Prabhupada very pleased to hear? Book sales were increasing very fast. So when he said continue to work hard, what should we work hard at? Selling his books. We should work hard to sell Srila Prabhupada's books. And if we work hard selling Srila Prabhupada's books, then what's going to happen? You're going to go back to Godhead. So everybody got that? You understand? What did he say? Your 15-minute lecture in one ear, out the other? Distribute my books, that's solid work. Right? Okay. And Prabhupada was often thinking of the land in Bombay. Right? Because although he had bought the property here, there was a big problem. That rascal, Mr. N. Nair, right, was trying to cheat Krishna. So Prabhupada had said, our business is not, we have no business fighting. A Vaishnava, he's not into fighting. He'll walk away. He's not. Some people, for their own prestige, they want to fight. Right? Oh, you spoke to me like that. I'll fight. But Prabhupada said, Vaishnavs are not. We can walk away. But because Srila Prabhupada had called Radha Rasa Bihari here, right? And because he said, I'll make you one mandir, you just stay here, for Krishna to go away was an insult. For Krishna. So for the sake of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada was ready to fight. See the difference? On his own behalf, not walk away, no problem. But for Krishna, for the aegis of Krishna, for the respect of Krishna, he's ready to fight. Sometimes he talked about it or mentioned it in a letter to his representatives there. The Bombay land purchase was still not finalized, and Prabhupada was particularly anxious that his disciples pay the money as agreed and move immediately onto the land. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was Srila Prabhupada's governing body commission secretary for India. Some of the devotees said that actually Prabhupada was the GBC secretary for India, although he allowed his secretaries in other parts of the world to manage mostly on their own and to make their own decisions. In India, he would scrutinize even small matters and make most of the decisions himself. Still, he counted on Tamal Krishna as his trusted assistant in important dealings. He would send Tamal Krishna from one Indian center to another to help the local devotees with governmental, legal, organizational, or preaching problems. So in other places, Srila Prabhupada would allow the GBCs to make most of the decisions, managerial decisions. He wasn't so much involved. But in India, he was particularly involved, and it was like Srila Prabhupada was the GBC for India, right? And the reason for that was is because his disciples, being in India, coming from the West, they had less experience, right? One time, Srila Prabhupada talked about the mentality of his Western disciples, right? He said, you go to the market and you ask the price, and the person tells you 10 times what the actual price is, and you compare it to dollars in America, and you think damn cheap. He said, you are all damn cheap babus. That's what he said. All damn cheap babus. So Srila Prabhupada had to train the devotees even how to purchase things without getting cheated. So because of that, and working in India was very complicated in those days for Westerners, because Western devotees, they grew up getting things done on the telephone. But in those days, very difficult to get anything done on the telephone. Right? If you wanted to call Delhi, you had to book a call. You had to wait 1 hour. And then they would call you back. So the devotees from America and from Europe, they couldn't understand. And if you answered the phone, you say hello. The other person says hello. Then you say hello. Then they say hello. Hello, 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 hello. So they would get frustrated very easily. Now it's different. Things have changed. People get work done on the telephone. A lot of work. But in those days, not. Very, very complicated. You can imagine nowadays if you picked up the phone and somebody just said hello, 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 hello. Right? Frustration. So Srila Prabhupada had to guide the devotees from the West himself so that everything would go on nicely in India. Prabhupada was just personally took care of the management in India. And he trained people like Tamal Krishna, Giriraj Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He personally trained them how to get things done in India. Okay, in Bombay, just prior to coming to Jaipur, Tamal Krishna had asked Prabhupada's permission to take sannyas, the renounced order. Srila Prabhupada had awarded sannyas to only a few men, and he had specified their duties as traveling and preaching. Taking sannyas, therefore, not only meant giving up wife and family, but also renouncing managerial posts. At the time, as Prabhupada had not set up the governing body commission, he had also initiated several sannyasis, purposefully not appointing any of them, even though they were some of his most able men, as GBC secretaries. The Grihastras were to manage the temples as presidents, and GBC secretaries and sannyasis were to travel and preach. Srila Prabhupada therefore had to carefully consider whether or not to give Tamal Krishna sannyas and thus lose his GBC secretary for India. On principle, Srila Prabhupada liked the idea of giving Tamal Krishna sannyas. If a young man was actually qualified to give up family life and to use his intelligence and energy in preaching Krishna consciousness, then Prabhupada was always ready to encourage it. The world was in dire need of Krishna consciousness, and even hundreds of sannyasis would still not be enough. On these grounds, how could he not appreciate the request of one of his leading disciples to take sannyas? But first, he would test Tamal Krishna's determination. Tamal Krishna was insistent. Seeing that Prabhupada would not make a commitment, Tamal Krishna had adopted the tactic of presenting himself before Prabhupada early in the morning without saying a word. In Bombay, he had entered Prabhupada's room, led the Mangalarti before the deities, and then sat silently before Srila Prabhupada. Knowing the mind of his disciple, Prabhupada could understand that Tamal Krishna was not only determined, but obstinate. Obstinate? After several days of tolerating Tamal Krishna's silent, insistent presence every morning, Prabhupada had finally agreed to consider seriously the request. Prabhupada was also concerned with Madri Devi Dasi, Tamal Krishna's wife. She was an attractive, intelligent girl who had given her life to Krishna consciousness, and Tamal Krishna, by his own choice, had married her only a year ago. Spiritually, Madri was Srila Prabhupada's daughter, and Prabhupada wanted to protect her from undue disturbance. Even as householders, Tamal Krishna's wife had been renounced, traveling with Prabhupada throughout India, with little time or facility for private life as husband and wife. Tamal Krishna had been in Bombay when Shyama Sundar had informed him that Prabhupada had mentioned in a letter to Brahmananda Swami in Africa that Tamal Krishna might take sannyas. Spurred on, he had left his wife in Bombay and joined Prabhupada in Jaipur. On leaving, however, Tamal Krishna had asked Madri for his personal copies of the first three volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam signed by Srila Prabhupada. Madri had become suspicious. She had asked why he wanted them. "I just want to read them," Tamal Krishna had answered, but she had suspected the worst. "No, you're not coming back." But assuring her that he would definitely be returning, he left for Jaipur. Once with Srila Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna again assumed his silent insistence. Whenever there would be an open meeting in Prabhupada's room, the GBC leaders would usually sit in a privileged position near Prabhupada so as best to receive direct instruction. Tamal Krishna, however, would simply sit outside the door. The first time he did this, Prabhupada looked up and said, "Tamal Krishna, are you sitting outside? That is very nice." And the other devotees took it that Prabhupada was praising his disciples' humility. On one occasion, Prabhupada addressed Tamal Krishna as, "Tamal Krishna Maharaj." The devotees were startled. The women devotees in Jaipur, being close friends with Madri, became angry at what they took to be Tamal Krishna's duplicity. Although Prabhupada had given permission, Tamal Krishna went ahead with his plans. Even to the point of preparing his sannyas danda and dyeing his clothes. The women were outraged. Madri was not even there to represent herself. Altogether, the women went to see Srila Prabhupada, who patiently and sympathetically heard their presentation. Then Prabhupada called for Tamal Krishna and said, "Your wife is my daughter and my disciple, and I have to think of her also. So I do not know how I can do this, because she will be in great difficulty." Tamal Krishna argued, but Prabhupada pacified him and asked him to be patient. The sannyas issue had become a topic of controversy among the devotees in Jaipur. The men were rooting for sannyas, and the women were opposed. Prabhupada, however, remained grave. So you can see what complications there were in managing a movement, managing devotees' lives, right? And parties would develop, two parties. Not easy thing. No, not easy thing. And only someone very, very expert like Srila Prabhupada could balance everything properly. Proper balance. In order to manage anything, there has to be balance. Right? Even in a business, there has to be balance. There has to be proper growth, but at the same time, there has to be proper maintenance of a business. If there's too much growth, not enough maintenance, it will fail. If there's too much maintenance but not enough growth, it will fail. So Srila Prabhupada was expert at balancing everything, right? Proper. At one time, he told the devotees that no more opening temples. No more temples. We got enough temples, right? He said we should concentrate on the temples that we have and make them solid places of Krishna consciousness. We don't need more and more expansion, Prabhupada said. He said, because it's like they take milk and they add water to the milk, right? If you go on adding water to the milk, after some time it's not even milk anymore, right? So in the name of opening many temples, right, we dilute things without properly managing the temples that we already have, right? So that is not good. He said, we should boil the milk. When you boil milk, what happens? It becomes thick, right? It becomes thick. You can make kheer out of it, or rubbery, right? Rubbery. Right? So if you have milk, that's nice. But if you have nice rubbery, that's even better, right? Right? So you have devotees that are practicing Krishna consciousness. But if you have strong devotees, that's even better. So at some point, Srila Prabhupada said, we should boil the milk, right? Not so much worry about expansion. Srila Prabhupada, again, he was expert at how to judge time, place, circumstance, what should be done, what direction we should go, what should not be done. So we should try to understand from this Lilamrita about the mood of Srila Prabhupada and how to manage the Krishna consciousness movement as he did, so that the movement will grow and the devotees in it will become strong devotees of Krishna. What does it mean to be a strong devotee of Krishna? Huh? It means you always put on tilak, and you have kantimala, and you have your bead bag, right? And you're there for the prasadam on time. Strong devotee? No. Strong devotee means ready to serve Krishna 24 hours a day. Right? 24 hours a day, you're ready to do service for Krishna. Just like Srila Prabhupada did. 24 hours, he's engaged in Krishna's service. Hardly he slept. Hardly he ate. Right? So that's a strong devotee of Krishna. And that's what we're working for. Right? To become a strong devotee of Krishna. Any questions? Yes? Krishna Murari.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada gave order to shoot monkey. Then they shoot him hang or not.
What was that?
Jaipur, Prabhupada gave order. You are away from the monkey, then you kill one monkey and then hang.
Ah.
They did or not.
Yeah. He told him that was to hang a monkey. And the other monkeys won't come around. But he didn't expect the devotees to do that. He just said that was the way to do it. His question is that Prabhupada gave instruction how to get rid of the monkeys. You kill one monkey and hang him up, and the other monkeys won't come. But he didn't expect the devotees to do that. Because it was illegal to kill a monkey. You can't just go killing monkeys. Any other questions? Yes.
I have read that 5 kinds of activities are not allowed in Kali Yuga, and acceptance of the order of sannyas is one of them. So why do devotees take sannyas?
Yes. In Srimad Bhagavatam it's stated that the acceptance of the order of sannyas is forbidden. And Ashvamedha, Gomedha, Yajnas are forbidden. And impregnating the brother's wife is forbidden in Kali Yuga. So one can ask, but Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, and ISKCON they give sannyas, right? So how is that? In the Vanashram system, there's four orders: Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanprast, and Sannyas. So certain varnas would complete that cycle of taking sannyas. Brahmachari life is student life. Grihastha life is husband and wife, children. Vanaprast wife is renounced, beginning stage of renunciation, right? And sannyas is final renunciation. So that process is there in the Vedic system for a person to advance spiritually, right? But in Kali Yuga, people are very fallen, right? So that system of renunciation, first becoming Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprast, and Sannyas, nobody can follow it. Nobody can follow it. So for that reason, and in that sense, sannyas is forbidden. But still we saw Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. And why did Lord Chaitanya take sannyas? Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's filled with six opulences. One of the opulences of the Supreme Lord is that He's the most renounced. The Lord Chaitanya, the son of Nanda Maharaj, Brajendra Nandana say, Sachi Sutta Hoyla say, why he needs to take sannyas for renunciation? Not required. But why did he take sannyas? Lord Chaitanya specifically took sannyas, it's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, because of the student community. And at that time, the students, people were surrendering to Lord Chaitanya's program of chanting Hare Krishna when he was freely distributing Krishna Bhakti. But the students were not surrendering. And even his own students, when Lord Chaitanya was emerged in the mood of the gopis, he was chanting the gopis' names, and his own students were criticizing, why you should chant the name of Krishna, why are you chanting the names of the gopis? So they didn't understand, right? And he had to chastise them. So then he began to think, I've come to spread Krishna Bhakti, but if they're not understanding my mission and who I am, then they will make offense and they will not, and they're advanced spiritually. So because people respect sannyasis, they have a natural respect for sannyas. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas to facilitate his preaching. To facilitate his preaching. So, although it's stated that sannyas is forbidden in Kali Yuga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu still accepted sannyas. And although there were certainly at that time also Tridandi sannyasis, not just Ekadandi sannyasis. Ekadandi sannyasis were in the line of Sankaracharya, Mayavadis. And Tridandi sannyasis are Vaishnav sannyasis. treat on thee, three sticks. And that wrapped up cloth, there's three sticks, signifying the Lord, the living entity, and devotional service. Right? Three sticks. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't take sannyas from Tridandi. He took sannyas from Ekadandi. Keshav Bharati, who was in the line of Sankaracharya. And why? So not only he took sannyas, which is so-called forbidden, but he took sannyas from the Mayavadi Sampradaya. Why? Because at that time, and understand, at that time, people felt if you took sannyas, you had to be sannyas from the Sankaracharya line. That was real sannyas. So in order, again, for preaching purposes, he took sannyas in that Mayavadi order of sannyas, so that people would appreciate his acceptance of sannyas and respect him. Who are they respecting now? They're respecting the Supreme Lord. And in that way, his preaching would become successful. So the whole idea is very different from the traditional acceptance of sannyas. And acceptance of sannyas for the purpose of preaching. Understand? Srila Prabhupada again told the devotees, and an interesting thing said, Prabhupada said once, that whatever I did as a sannyasi, I could have done as a householder if my family would have cooperated. That's an interesting point. So Srila Prabhupada didn't really make so much distinction between sannyasis and householders. He engaged them equally in Krishna's service of spreading the mission of Lord Chaitanya. We see the example that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had sent sannyasis to England, but they weren't so successful. Srila Prabhupada had sent householders to England, and they were immensely successful. So, Srila Prabhupada did things for preaching. He gave young men that probably weren't so qualified really to take sannyas. But he did it for preaching, because sannyasis were required for spreading the movement. And even though he knew probably they wouldn't last, still he did it for preaching. And gave them the opportunity, just like we give Brahminical initiations. It doesn't mean that because you put on a 2 paisa thread that now you become a Brahmin, but it's an opportunity for you to develop Brahminical qualities. Right? Cleanliness and so many other Brahminical qualities that are there. Right? So again, it's yuktam vairagya uchite. Yuktam vairagya uchite. Using things, whether it's sannyas or grihastha, ashram, in the service of Krishna. Is that okay?
Okay.
Any other questions?
It's advice for women to not to take sannyas, like men's, because their psychophysical nature is different from men's. And they always need someone to help them. Like when they are in their childhood, their father take care of them. when they are young, their husband take care of them, and when they are old, their son take care of them. But when Lord Chaitanya takes sannyas, there was his mother and her wife in his house, and there was no else other man to take care of them. So then who took care of them? And how can he take sannyas by leaving his duties for her wife and
Right, good question. Very good question. How could Lord Chaitanya take sannyas when there was nobody to take care of his young wife and his old mother, because his father had already died and his older brother had already died? That's the question. Right? So, Lord Chaitanya specifically did things as a devotee to set an example. So, he set the example by doing that, that even, you know, materially speaking, you're absolutely correct. How could someone go off and leave their unprotected mother, unprotected wife? But he wanted to show the urgency of spreading Krishna consciousness. Right? Because you're thinking about one old lady or one young lady, but there's millions and millions of people that are in need of Krishna consciousness. And Lord Chaitanya set that example. And at the same time, there were his followers. What was his name? Bhaktivedanta Thakur. He actually took care of Lord Chaitanya's family. He would look, make sure they had things and whatever they required. Right? But then, you know, the wife of Lord Chaitanya was so renounced, and she was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, she would chant one round of mala, and for every round of mala, she would put aside one grain of rice. And as many malas she would chant in the day, that many grains of rice she would cook and eat. Not an ordinary lady. Right? So it's hard to compare their situation with an ordinary situation. But generally speaking, you're right. You're correct. But you have to take it also in a bigger picture of what Lord Chaitanya was trying to set the example of, and to the importance and the urgency. Spreading Krishna consciousness, there's an urgency to it. Right? Is that all right? Okay. Any other questions? The urgent need for Krishna consciousness is down at the Arthur Road Jail, and we have to go down there and distribute some books to the incarcerated conditioned souls. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.